Free agency has officially begun and all the chaos that comes with it. Victor Oladipo and Dwayne Dedman are back. PJ Tucker is on his way to Philadelphia, but Miami and the rest of the NBA are on hold as they put together a monster offer for a superstar. What happens next? We'll break it all down in today's live edition of Locked On Heat.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. It's a free agency edition of Locked On Heat, your daily podcast covering all things Miami Heat, however you may be listening or watching on YouTube, Odyssey, your favorite podcast app. Thanks so much for making us your first listen every day. I'm David Ramil, and with me, as always, is my co-host Wes Goldberg, coming to you live as we break down the latest news, rumors, notes, possibilities, everything that comes with free agency. Locked On Heat is partnering with Arcade 1UP to give away three free NBA Jam Shaq machines. That's right, three. These are the guys known for making the incredible retro three-quarter scale at home arcade games like Pac-Man, Golden Tee, Mortal Kombat, and many more. Enter the win on arcade1up.com/lockedon. That's arcade1up.com/lockedon for your chance to win one. We are here. It's free agency. So much to get into, and we'll start off with all the news regarding the Miami Heat, particularly the fact that Dwayne Dedman and Victor Oladipo are both coming back to Miami. Of course, as long expected, P.J. Tucker on his way, signing a three-year deal with the Philadelphia 76ers. Let's get into it, Wes. First of all, I guess let's just wrap up the P.J. Tucker news. That's not been a surprise to anybody. Chose a deal for whatever reason, more money, a chance to go and reconnect in Rockets East, or to, as some people have suggested, he has some business interests in Philadelphia. I'm not sure exactly what those might be, but either way, a one-year deal with Miami, and now he's on his way back to the city of brotherly
love. Business interest is $3 million more per year, I guess, and a chance to compete for a championship in Philadelphia. Can't blame him. It was a great year. The Heat loved P.J. Tucker. I don't think that they ever wavered from that stance, but they did know how much that they could offer from a maximum. It just so happened that P.J. Tucker rebuilt his value in Miami after people thought he was washed, after Milwaukee won the finals.
Oh, yeah.
And he comes to Miami. They're able to utilize him in a way that Milwaukee was not able to. He rebuilt his value, and he's able to go get his probably last big contract that he's going to have, 3 years, $30-plus million from Philadelphia. Okay. Great for him. Very happy for P.J. Tucker. It does leave a gaping hole of power forward now for the Miami Heat that we're I know we're going to talk about, and it's something that the Heat have really yet to address, even with all the retaining their own free agents like they have.
Yeah, absolutely. However, the good news is that they were able to re-sign Victor Oladipo, a one-year, another prove-it type deal for $11 million. And then Dwayne Dedman, 2 years, $9 million for him to stay in Miami. So let's get to the Victor Oladipo ones, because I think that's the one that's got the most optimism amongst Heat fans. Everybody's really, really glad to see Oladipo back, the possibilities of him coming back. We heard a lot of reporting regarding interest around the league, a possibility of putting up big numbers in teams like Sacramento and elsewhere. Instead, he chooses to come back to Miami. Was it a money deal? Was it an opportunity to stay here? Could it be a sign of other things to come? Because if we know that Oladipo is looking to prove it, to put up the kind of numbers, as we've talked about recently, that show that he can become or regain close to his all-star form, maybe there's a trade down the line where he can all of a sudden get more opportunity, and then that makes the deal much more understandable, I guess. Like, we had both thought that Oladipo was on his way up. What's your overall take on the move?
My overall take is that the Miami Heat listened to Locked On Heat. I think their front office listens to us. I implored the Heat to overpay for Victor Oladipo yesterday. And within the opening minutes of free agency, it was the first move that was announced by Miami, was that they were going to sign him to a one-year $11 million contract. Look, the $11 million contract, that number, not a coincidence. It's about $1 million more, slightly more than the maximum mid-level exception, which settles around like $10.3 or $10.5 million. So it's slightly more than Victor Oladipo could have literally gotten anywhere else, right? Outside of teams that had a bunch of cap space and they're not using all their cap space on Victor Oladipo. So it is the most money that Oladipo could have gotten. Miami had his bird rights and they used it, and they get a nice one-year prove-it deal for Victor Oladipo. You mentioned maybe being able to get traded. It's a very stackable contract. If you look at the Miami Heat's cap sheet before the Oladipo deal and the Dedman deal, it was, 30-something million for Jimmy Butler, 30-something million for Bam, $30 million for Kyle Lowry. they're tradable, but they're not stackable salaries, right? Those are like one for one kind of salaries. Right. If you're looking to make a move at some point before the deadline, these are the kinds of salaries you need. Even Duncan Robinson at $16.9 million, considering where Duncan's value is right now, not super tradable. You needed more tradable salaries. By signing Victor Oladipo to an $11 million contract, you have created a cap slot that you would not have had. The Heat could not have signed just somebody else to $11 million. They didn't have anybody else's bird rights. They had Oladipo's bird rights. So that's part of it. The other part of it, too, is, like you said, it's a prove-it deal. The Heat have invested 2 years into Victor Oladipo's rehab. I think they felt a little bit like, we don't really want to see this guy walk away for nothing and watch him blossom somewhere else after we're the ones who waited through the rehab for 2 years and paid for him to rehab for 2 years. So there's part of that too. There might also be an understanding that by the deadline, if he's not getting the playing time for whatever reason, maybe they can move him to another team before the deadline, and he can go get that opportunity elsewhere. I think it's all the above. Overall, I think it's a fantastic deal for the Miami Heat. It shows me that they're thinking the right way. It's a reason why they wanted to avoid the hard cap, because this, now you're sort of nudging against it now with these two deals. And they're willing to spend the money on a roster trying to get back up to championship level.
Yeah, I have to agree with all that. My thought process is they must know something. Like, this is not a team that just throws money away. I mean, they might have taken a flyer on somebody at a veteran minimum or something like that, if, you know, maybe they're unproven or anything like that. But after seeing him for 2 years and seeing what he was capable of in spurts, and yes, he did struggle at times throughout the postseason, which is something a lot of people conveniently forget. But knowing that he's dedicated to the work, that he's still on this roster, and that he can contribute, whether it's backing up Tyler Hero or in the starting lineup as well, either way, he's going to be an impactful player. And they want to make that commitment to him. And yes, you're right. They could either trade him, or if he's still there on this roster when they trade, let's say, Tyler Hero or somebody else for that superstar, then all of a sudden you've got Oladipo on the roster who can come in and contribute. He knows the system.
There was no replacement.
He's a proven commodity.
I mean, he's got, there's still a bunch of upside there. He's super talented. He was one of the top picks in the draft for a reason. To me, this was a no-brainer. The only reason, and I said this yesterday, the only reason you don't do something like this is because you're cheap. The Arisons stepped up. They didn't cheap out on it. They re-signed Victor Oladipo, and they gave him – they overpaid. They overpaid for Victor Oladipo, but they had to keep him from signing the full mid-level exception somewhere else, or maybe he was going to get more touches. Yeah. Name the crap team that was going to do it. Yeah. He could have gotten a bunch of touches there. He's not going to get those kinds of touches in Miami, but he's going to get an opportunity to play for a winning organization, further that development, go further along in his rehab, and still potentially boost his value for next summer, which – by doing this, the Heat still retain his bird rights for next summer if he's still on the roster. The more interesting thing to me, weirdly enough, is the Dwayne Dedman's contract. $4.5 million a year on average for him. Yeah. Twice as much as he probably should be making. He should be making the veteran minimum. And that, to me, screams tradable contract. I'll be really interested to see what the second year of that deal looks like. When we get the details on it, is it fully guaranteed and all these things? But at $4.5 million, this next year, a very stackable, tradable deal in Dwayne Dedman. That screams to me, hey, come back. We're going to overpay for you, understanding that we're probably going to trade you before the deadline. But this buys some time for Omer Yurtseven to not have to step into that backup center role right away. But we can develop him over the course of the season. Maybe we trade you at the deadline, and then Yurtseven's ready to step into that backup role. But this is just another stackable salary for them.
Yeah, absolutely. You could even see like a team option on that second year.
Yeah,
like that.
Sure.
Absolutely non-guaranteed. And if that's the case, then he becomes a free agent. But, you know, if he's getting paid twice as much as he should be making, or quote unquote should be making, then he's already recouped that salary in the first year. And then he can just enter free agency next year, see what's available to him then, and then look at another deal. So, Kit, he won't be included in any trades now. Like, if you're making a trade for Kevin Durant or Donovan Mitchell or somebody along those lines, you can't include Dedman's contract.
No, you have to wait. I mean,
he would have had to be December 15th.
Yeah, you have to wait in December.
Somewhere like that.
Yes, yeah. That's true. For Oladipo and Dedman. They're able to sign Dedman to that deal because they quietly had his bird rights too, which was a weird – like, they could have literally signed Dwayne Dedman to, like, a $30 million a year deal if they wanted to, because they had his bird rights. So obviously they did not do that. But I found that interesting.
All right. Well, we keep going into some of the other moves around the league here. As far as the rest of the Heat free agents, It looks like Markieff Morris still has no deal, whether it's with Miami or anywhere else. Again, reporting around him is that it's likely he'll be moving on. Didn't get a lot of opportunity in Miami, mostly because of injury, and then he couldn't just find his way into the rotation once the postseason began and he was welcomed back into play. So we'll see what happens with him. Maybe he'll join his brother with the Clippers. Caleb Martin, a restricted free agent, has a qualifying offer with Miami. So whatever offer sheet he gets from any other team, Miami has the right to match it. We'll see what that what happens there. The thought process is that Martin wants to come back. He's a believer in Miami. They're a believer in him. So my thought is that he'll probably find a way to come back to Miami. On what kind of deal, who knows? Again, it might be another one and one plus one where he, and you know, it's a prove it deal, makes the most of this year, and then maybe enters again unrestricted free agency next season. We'll see how that pans out.
No, to stay on the Caleb Martin thing, it depends on what kind of offer Caleb Martin gets. You know, I've heard stuff that maybe he can end up on the Lakers or one of the LA teams, maybe the Clippers, like, you know, teams that are trying to fill out their wing depth and things like that. I think Caleb Martin impressed enough where there are teams considering using, you know, even the taxpayer mid-level exception on him or a portion of it. And if that's the case, that leaves Miami in a tough bind because they still, Miami, as we're talking here, still has their taxpayer mid-level exception available. They can't use the full mid-level exception because that would hard cap them, but they could still use like that $6.3 million limit and not get hard capped. So I think when you're looking at what Miami does next, they're considering what they want to do with that mid-level exception money. And the big thing here is, despite retaining some of these free agents, and we'll see what happens with Caleb Martin, he's not really a four, even though they played him at power forward a little bit last year. They prefer to play him on the perimeter. They have a gaping hole at power forward. They still do not have a power forward on this roster now that PJ Tucker is officially signed with Philadelphia.
Yeah, some of the names that we talked about, Mo Bamba electing to sign a two-year deal with the Orlando Magic for about $21 million. Even Isaiah Hartenstein going to the New York Knicks was somewhat surprising. Yeah. So that makes Mitchell Robinson a possibility. As far as I know, still an unrestricted free agent.
I don't think they go
we'll
center.
See what his goals are.
Look, I don't think they go center. You know, you re-sign Deadman, you've got Yurtsvin, you've got Bam.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I think they're looking at power forward.
Unless you're including Yurtsevin in a potential deal to manifest over the next couple of days, in which case, yes, then you have to shore up the center position. So you trust that the Heat front office knows what they're doing, right? Like, I know a lot of Heat fans have been going through it over the last couple of days between the Kyrie disappointment and then potentially getting said player and then not getting said player, and now P.J. Tucker leaves. Look, everybody loved P.J. Tucker. I mean, he was beloved in Milwaukee, even as they weren't playing him during key moments during the postseason. But that doesn't mean that he wasn't beloved by fans. He brought that dog mentality to the Bucks. They won a championship. He brought it here, and unfortunately, Miami wasn't able to capitalize. Having said that, like, this Heat front office, they've always positioned themselves in a place to win. Like, they're going to be able to get something done, whether it's just bringing in these low-level free agents and positioning themselves for when that next superstar becomes available, whether it's KD or whether it is Donovan Mitchell or somebody along those lines. That's what this Miami knows how to do better. I mean,
it's pretty transparent. Not hiding it, right? You bring back Oladipo on a one-year, $11 million deal. You overpay for Deadman to just create another stackable salary on your roster sheet. You are clearly positioning yourself for a run at Kevin Durant here. Maybe now we get to this because you and I did just an instant reaction show. It's up on the podcast feed. It's up on the YouTube channel talking about Kevin Durant and all right after he requested a trade from Brooklyn. It is very clear that Miami's plan is to go all in on another star player. That has been so transparent. It's why you let PJ Tucker walk. That hurt for the Heat. That really hurt. They enlisted their own players to try to convince PJ Tucker to come back for less money. It hurt them bad, and they know that. They know that they need to use this mid-level exception on somebody to replace him. We'll get to some of the best remaining free agents here in a second, but that is the sacrifice you make when you recognize that this roster is suffering from a lack of top-end talent. And you and I could debate whether or not that's true, but actions speak louder than words, and Pat Riley clearly believes that to be true. Because all of this is geared towards going after basically Kevin Durant or maybe Donovan Mitchell down the line. I still don't know where this trade package stacks up. You know, they can't move Bam Adebayo to Brooklyn directly because of the Ben Simmons contract and the Bam Adebayo contract. You can't have two of those five-year rookie contracts that you trade for on your roster. So they'd have to move Bam to a third team to potentially get another player sent Brooklyn's way that is very interesting to them. It's all very complicated. I just wonder, look, I think this much is fair to say. On paper, the Heat do not have the best offer, right? On paper, they do not have the best offer available. It's
That's fair.
Agency does Kevin Durant truly have in directing himself to where he wants to go? And if we're hearing,
who does have the best offer? Who does have the best offer? Phoenix?
I don't know. Phoenix Suns fans are like, yeah, why wouldn't you take DeAndre Ayton and Mikal Bridges? I'm like, if I'm Brooklyn, do I want DeAndre Ayton? Do I want to spend?
Well, they don't, right? The report is that they don't. And that they want a package centered around Devin Booker. And Phoenix was like, no thanks. Like, we love KD. We're not trading away our young superstar for him. So, I mean, that seems like it's a done deal as well.
Well, I don't know. That's probably some posturing, right? Like, hey, we want Devin Booker. And maybe you land on, like, you ask for Devin Booker. Maybe you land on DeAndre Ayton. But as we talked about on our reaction,
and Bridges, like,
just doing the DeAndre Ayton thing is very complicated. First of all, there's a base year compensation thing, which doesn't, it's complicated, but it makes it harder, basically. And he's a restricted free agent, so you'd have to do a sign and trade, which triggers a hard cap for Brooklyn. And if another team swoops in and offers him on a cap, offers DeAndre Ayton an offer sheet, that really throws a wrench in a potential deal. So if Phoenix is not going to move off of Devin Booker, and then they can't for some reason include DeAndre Ayton, then what is it? It's Mikal Bridges and draft picks? Doesn't scream to me awesome trade package for Kevin Durant, right? You know, the Memphis Grizzlies, the Toronto Raptors, all those teams could conceivably put great packages together. But does Kevin Durant really want to play there? Would he accept playing there? Right. And so at the end of the day, I have no idea where this is going to end up. But I do know this. It's the Heat's number one priority is trying to figure it out. Right.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I remember sitting there in that Pat Riley press conference at the end of the season. And like he's saying all the right things and talking about this past team and how close they got and everything else. And I kind of lean over to you and I say, hey, he looks like he's ready to make a deal. Yeah. Like he's itching to do something big and blow it up. And here
what
we
do you
are,
keep saying? He kept saying, later. Who's the player? Who's the player? He kept saying, just if there's a player out there, let me know. If there's a player, that's what he kept saying.
Right.
And that is exactly how this team is positioning themselves. They don't know if they can get Kevin Durant. They don't know if they can get Donovan Mitchell. But they do know that what they can control is, hey, if one of these players is available to us, we're going to put ourselves in position to make that move. That's what this whole season is about. That's what this whole season is about. Yeah. It would not surprise me if Miami took a step back next year because they're so concerned and prioritizing going and getting another star where you're losing a helpful role player in PJ Tucker and maybe, you know, everybody gets a little bit older and all these things happen. I don't know. But the priority is getting that other star.
This feels kind of like the offseason following the Orlando bubble. And I know a lot of people have made that comparison. I've done it too. It feels oddly similar. Like they let Jay Crowder walk because, you know, you didn't want to extend him for a 3-year deal, which is what he was able to procure from the Phoenix Suns. And then
because you wanted to chase
Giannis. You're kind of holding your chips. Yes, because you're chasing that superstar. And that's just how Miami operates. You take that chance. It might not be the right move, but at the same time, you have to look at this roster and consider you've already got 3 all-star level players in Jimmy Bam and Kyle Lowry here. For all the
Lowry's not there anymore.
He can be really effective.
Yeah, like, no, very good. He's a very good
piece at which Miami
he's very
plays.
Good. He's not all-star.
Role player.
He's not an all-star anymore.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Let's say. But let's assume there's a possibility also that he can take another leap, that they believe in him, that he's hearing the Kyrie rumors, and he's saying, you know what, none of that matters to me at this point in my career. There's an understanding between him, Jimmy, and the front office and the coaching staff, and say, look, we just want you to drop 15 pounds. We want you to get into quote-unquote world-class shape, as Pat Riley said. That version of Kyle Lowry next season is as good or better of an option as any other that's available right now in terms of point guards. Not saying Donovan Mitchell or KD, those are superstars, those are different. But for now, if you have this roster and you quote-unquote run it back, that's a really, really good team that was within one shot of making the NBA Finals and potentially challenging the Golden State Warriors. There's a lot of desperation amongst Heat fans because we've been so ingrained to say there's the next move. You know, there's the potential of a big trade or a huge home run swing after 2010. Yeah. We get greedy, and that's just a reality of it. And so I think there's also a lack of clarity and understanding and saying, you know what, this team is still very good, and even if they lose PJ Tucker, they can still add somebody else to fill in for him. So let's dig into that because I think that's the next step then of this conversation is, what happens with Miami if they're not able to acquire KD or Donovan Mitchell? What's the next big step for them in terms of filling in that sizable gap at power forward that you and I talked about?
Well, I think regardless if you get Kevin Durant or Donovan Mitchell, you still have this traded player exception money sitting there. No matter what, even if you trade for those guys, you would still, like right now, you would still have that money sitting there, and that money would go towards filling that power forward position. So the best remaining free agents, unless something happened within the last 10 minutes that I don't know of,
I would trade. Trade Dave for KD. I mean, that's a superstar deal waiting to happen. I could do it. I mean, I love Dave, but why not? Let's run it back.
Look, man, I mean, you and I have chemistry, and that's really hard to replicate, but it's Kevin Durant. So, the best remaining free agents, I think, are Otto Porter, Kyle Anderson, TJ Warren, and Danilo Gallinari. Those are the best options remaining at power forward. I would actually go far as to say that if you're able to get Otto Porter on a multi-year deal at that taxpayer mid-level mm-hmm. exception money, you might be better than you were with PJ Tucker. And that's nothing against PJ Tucker. He's an amazing defender, great screener. Otto Porter is just more dynamic. He's probably even more switchable defensively. He's an elite catch and shoot three-point shooter. Elite, okay, from multiple places, not just from the corner. Good ball mover, unselfish, won a championship, made a ton of money after signing that contract with the Wizards a few years ago. And he's looking, obviously, for a pay bump. The Warriors aren't going to be able to give it to him because they have to retain Gary Payton and Kevon Looney. Otto Porter's out there. You would have to imagine he probably wants to stay with a competitive team. There is a spot that he can just walk right into right now in Miami. Otto Porter makes a lot of sense for this team. Also, the two teams that moved the ball the most were Golden State and Miami last year. Otto Porter was a natural fit in Golden State. He would be a natural fit in Miami. That's your number one option. And then from there, I think you go to Kyle Anderson from Memphis, a free agent. TJ Warren, a name that's been bandied about. And then obviously Gallinari, who has been rumored to be looking at that maybe even a full mid-level exception type of salary. I would not go that far. I actually wouldn't exceed the minimum for Danilo Gallinari, considering his defensive limitations at this point. So he's probably going to get a better offer somewhere else. But those are the top names on the board.
Yeah, Gallo apparently rumored to be interested in joining the Chicago Bulls as the primary suitor there. I think Boston is also in the mix. There were a couple of teams also looking to add Gallinari. And, of course, Miami is still amongst one of them. So we'll see how that plays out. It looks like he might be asking or commanding a little bit more. One of the player exceptions there, but I'm not sure. The lower one, like what, $5, $6 million?
$6 million. Roughly, the other option, too, is trading Duncan Robinson. Right now, the problem with this, and I know that everybody wants to trade Duncan Robinson for Kevin Durant straight up, but the problem with trading Duncan Robinson is it would probably come with a draft pick, right? And so, can you afford to get rid of a draft pick when you're kind of stockpiling whatever assets you have for a Kevin Durant trade? No, the answer is clearly no. You can't move any of these picks in a Duncan Robinson trade that's separate from a Kevin Durant deal. So. It would not shock me if Duncan Robinson, everybody thinks that Duncan Robinson was gone this offseason. It's looking more and more like Duncan Robinson's going to be part of the Miami Heat to start the regular season.
Wow. JaVale McGee, 3 years, $20 million to join the Dallas Mavericks.
I like that for them.
$20 million for JaVale McGee?
What's 3 years, 20? I mean, what is that, like $6 million a year?
Seven a year. Yeah, 6.8, something like that. I mean, that's... Well, you know what? Good for him. I know he was a fine player in Phoenix, so that's a problem there too. Now all of a sudden they're kind of missing the center option that McGee was with the Suns last year. If they're going to lose Ayton as well, they're going to look to shore up that center position. Who knows what they'll be moving forward? Like they have a closing window as well, like for Chris Paul and his age and everything else. And if apparently, according to several reports, they're looking at Jay Crowder as well. That might be a problem for them. Now, is that still a possibility? Do you think Miami is still in the market to acquire Jay Crowder, as some have reported?
I don't know. People keep throwing Jay Crowder into trades. I don't see what it is. I don't see Phoenix taking back Duncan Robinson. That doesn't make sense for them, for Jay Crowder, who's a high-level rotation player for them on an expiring deal. They don't want Duncan Robinson's money. I just don't see it, unless it's part of some sort of bigger trade framework. I don't know how Jay Crowder ends up in Miami, but maybe there's something I'm not seeing. I don't know. No, I think it's going to come with free agency is how they're going to fill this four spot. And then, look, I'll keep saying it, man. Like, you need to hold on to whatever assets you can, and the Heat are going to, until this Kevin Durant situation plays itself out. We should also mention Bradley Beal signed a 5-year, $251 million extension with the Washington Wizards. If the Kevin Durant thing doesn't work out, if Donovan Mitchell is not on the move from Utah, and if things go south in Washington for Bradley Beal before the trade deadline, that could be an option, right? The Heat are just keeping the powder dry. Whether or not Kevin Durant comes to Miami or not, the next calendar year, not just this summer, not just the next couple of days, not just this free agency period, the next NBA calendar year is about getting another star. So maybe it's not Durant. Maybe it's not Donovan Mitchell. Maybe Bradley Beal forces his way out of Washington after getting paid. Maybe that's been on his mind this entire time. Let me get this huge 5-year extension and then figure out my next destination later. We've seen that happen time and time again. But it's just it's worth keeping an eye on, because that's a lot of money. I don't even know if you're the Heat, you want Bradley Beal when he's going to get paid $50+ million 5 years from now.
Yeah, good point. I'm trying to think about the next steps. Well, again, I mean, for Miami, there's nothing else they can do. They're kind of in a holding pattern. They've put in feelers for Utah, supposedly, reportedly. They're also waiting on Kevin Durant to see what happens with the Brooklyn Nets. At this point in time, like, you can't really move forward with in any other direction. You can't shore up that four spot. I mean,
well, no, you can't. What do you mean you can't shore up the four spot? Why can't you?
Well, I just think, again, there's too many pieces in hold here. Like, you have to wait and see who you're trading and what you're getting back in return. I just think that there's questions there in terms of whatever proposed deals
you're getting. If Otto Porter says right now, I'll sign with you on a 3-year deal at that taxpayer mid-level exception, you don't think that he'd say, cool, sign it? Why not?
Yeah, I guess so.
I think you could use that. I think that's the only
mechanism. But how do you promise Porter the opportunity / minutes knowing that you're going to get KD, who's going to start over him anyway, right? That's the whole thing. That makes it a little bit more difficult.
You could start all three. You could start like Jimmy Butler at the 2, Durant at the 3, Porter at the 4. I don't know. Or you just say, sorry, bud, we got Kevin Durant. Now we're going to go win a championship. Sorry about it. Like, I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, I guess it could work. I don't know. I mean, yeah, no, I don't think Steven, sorry. I don't think the Kyrie deal is happening now. I don't know what happens with them, but I don't think who wouldn't you trade for KD? Is this a question that we're getting to right now?
Yeah, let's get to some questions.
For me, look, as far as I'm concerned, I guess Jimmy and Bam is pretty much it, right? And even then, like, I know some people question whether or not Bam should or shouldn't be traded. I question whether or not Jimmy should or shouldn't be traded. I think we brought this up in the earlier episode that we recorded, the reaction to the Kevin Durant news. Like, I mean, you could go in a different direction. And like, people are misconstruing my suggestions about trading Kevin Durant. I mean, trading Jimmy Butler as me advocating for this and things of that sort. Not in the least. Like, I mean, I've actually talked to Jimmy Butler. I've interacted with him. I like him on this team, etc. Like, there's no reason why I'd want Jimmy traded off this team, but it is a possibility. There is no loyalty in the NBA, and you have to take that into consideration.
Generally speaking, it is a possibility for sure. Like, I think John Hollinger put it this way for The Athletic. Yeah. You're going to see how untouchable these untouchable guys are across the league now that Kevin Durant is available, right?
Right.
I'll go back to this. If I'm Brooklyn, I don't want Jimmy Butler. I'm looking for younger pieces to rebuild around with Ben Simmons and stuff. To me, that Jimmy Butler isn't doing anything for me. That doesn't accomplish anything for me right now. As great of a player as Jimmy Butler is, that doesn't help me. That doesn't help what I'm trying to do from a team building perspective. If I'm with you, who wouldn't I trade for Kevin Durant? I wouldn't trade Jimmy Butler. I would have to think really hard. I would have to know what the back end of my roster looks like if I'm going to trade Bam Adebayo. That's the thing here, is if you're acquiring Kevin Durant, you're acquiring him to go win a championship. And you got to look at, all right, what are we going to give up here to get Kevin Durant? And is what we have left plus Kevin Durant good enough to win a championship? And if it's Jimmy Butler, Kevin Durant, and Kyle Lowry, it really depends on what the rest of that roster looks like before you can answer that question. Yeah. So I don't know what it looks like. I know it doesn't look like Dwayne Dedman starting at center. I know that. I know it doesn't look like Omer Yurtseven starting at center. I know it doesn't look like the no power forward that currently is on this roster. Like, that's what I know.
Yep.
So it depends on what the rest of this team looks like before you can answer who you wouldn't move. And that's the other thing, too, is I know that Brooklyn is posturing right now. Hey, we don't want DeAndre Ayton. In fact, we want Devin Booker, right? We don't want Tyler Hero. We're going to need to have Bam Adebayo. Figure that part out. Like, whatever it is that Brooklyn's posturing sounds great, but we got to just wait to see what the offers actually look like and then how much agency Kevin Durant has and how much influence he can have on the developments here. Like, there's a world that Brooklyn doesn't get a whole lot back the way that they think that they're going to get back because every team conceivably, theoretically wants Kevin Durant, right? There's all 30 teams want Kevin Durant. But, like, what teams can acquire Kevin Durant but maintain a championship-level roster, right? And while also giving up enough to keep Brooklyn happy and in the mix in the playoffs, which is ultimately what they want to end up being. So that's a fine line, man. I don't know what deal exists out there. The one I keep going back to is Toronto. If you could trade Scottie Barnes, you're giving Brooklyn a blue-chip young player that they could build around, but maybe you're able to still keep, like, Siakam and Fred VanVleet and some of these other pieces, two all-star players in Van Vliet and Siakam with Kevin Durant. You can figure out how to rebuild around those three guys. Does Kevin Durant want to play in Toronto? I don't know. You'd have to ask him. I have no idea. Memphis, it's kind of the same thing. A bunch of young players. Could you put him next to Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson or Ja Morant and even Steven Adams at center, who he obviously has a relationship with? Like, that team is really good. I don't know if that team is, like, better than the Clippers, you know? I don't know. So it's just it's going to be really interesting.
On the Miami side of things, like, we keep asking this question about whether or not this team is good enough, right? And similar to what we've talked about in terms of the way this front office operates, that you want to put yourself in a position to succeed, they kind of all always work that way in terms of on the floor as well.
Yeah.
Like, this team wants to set themselves up. Like, look back a couple seasons ago to the Orlando bubble, even before that. They just wanted to be in a position because you never know what could happen. You're a Giannis Antetokounmpo rolled ankle or a Joel Embiid busted face, and next thing you know, you're able to take advantage of those breaks, and you bet on yourself internally. You bet on Jimmy Butler knowing when to take advantage and when to seize the moment, because he is, as you've said before, probably the best gamer in the NBA, a guy who always lives for these moments, and you want those kinds of guys on you. So, you know, who knows what the rest of the roster will look like, but if you've got that star-level player in KD, Jimmy, Bam, whoever is around that core, that's enough, I think. This team views themselves as being able to compete against anybody because they just want to put themselves in that position where they can go up against those top teams. And, you know, unfortunately, it didn't work out this past season because of those injuries and things of that sort. They wound up being on the receiving end of that, you know, that where they wanted to be the team to position themselves. Unfortunately, they couldn't take advantage of, and Boston was able to take advantage of those opportunities when Miami was out with an injury. You know, Boston the same way, they were injured as well. So that's just the way this team operates, I think. I don't know that they ever really are concerned with next man up, right? Isn't that how it always works out with this roster?
I mean, I guess we saw how far that got them last year, though. You know, it was basically just Jimmy Butler carrying a bunch of next guys up, you know, into Game 7 against Boston. But I don't think what Pat Riley wants to accomplish here is getting Kevin Durant to make the most of a 2-year window, and then whatever happens after that happens. I don't think that that's what Pat. I don't think it's like. To me, Pat Riley's goal isn't to win a championship and then retire to Malibu. I think the goal is to win a championship, but also set up the Heat for success. I think that's what's so interesting about Kevin Durant is he's under contract for 4 more years. And he's going to be good for those 4 years, right? This is one of the greatest players of all time.
In theory.
Yeah, I mean, you know, injuries, et cetera, you know. But he should be very good for the next 4 years, arguably. He'll be MVP candidate for 2 years, and we'll see. But he'll be good for the 4-year contract. I think he wants to build something, and that's why I keep going back to, like, I don't know that he is really enthused about, you know, it being Lowry, Jimmy Butler, and Kevin Durant if it means getting rid of Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo and all the young pieces that can kind of carry you into that are the building blocks. Those are the guys that you're building with, right? Those are the people, those are the guys that are going to help you stay competitive in years 3 and 4 of Kevin Durant's contract and then beyond that. So
I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
I don't know about that. Like,
I don't know.
I keep thinking about 2003. Yeah. I mean, that's all, 2004, sorry. I mean, like Lamar Odom, right? The building block. Caron Butler, top 10 pick. Like, can you imagine today's NBA? Like, you're trading away a lottery pick, a guy that dropped, who was supposed to be, like Justice Winslow, a top 5 pick, and then he slips down to you at a 10th in the NBA lottery, cries at draft night, is a great part of two seasons in Miami, and then you ship him to an older, for an older Shaquille O'Neal. Like, I don't know that my, I don't know that Pat, the front office, Miami, sees beyond the next couple of years. It's like, let's win a title now, and then we'll reassess in 2024 what needs to happen. Yeah, you set yourself up for the possibility of it, but I don't know that you're not going to take those chances or not make those sacrifices of a Tyler Hero, et cetera. As much as you might believe in Tyler and his future and his potential and everything else like that, if you can get KD, I think they do it. Like, that's why I'm saying, like, everybody aside from Jimmy and Bam, I think, is tradable. Even Kyle Lowry and his relationship.
That's what I'm saying.
Jimmy,
that's the inflection point here, right? That's the decision point, is Bam Adebayo. When you're saying everybody outside of Jimmy and Bam is available, I agree with you. I think everybody outside of Jimmy and Bam is available. I just don't know that everybody outside of Jimmy and Bam gets it done, right? And so if push comes to shove and you have to include Bam Adebayo in a deal, and obviously, like I said, that would require a third team getting involved somehow. Do you do it if you're Pat Riley? And that's the part where I really don't know the answer. And it doesn't matter what you and I would do ultimately. I don't think that Pat Riley, I think, put it this way. I think what Pat Riley is doing right now and what the Heat's front office is doing right now is trying to figure out a way to get Kevin Durant on this roster without trading Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. That's what I think that this team is doing. And that's where I was trying to go with my original point before I went off track and forgot what I was talking about. When we're talking about when we're talking about all these other deals, that's why I started listing these other teams, is you kind of, it's like, all right, theoretical best offers, but what are the real offers on the table? What are the realistic things that the Brooklyn Nets can accept while appeasing Kevin Durant, and what teams would be willing to absorb Kevin Durant and all these things? And where does Miami's best trade package does not stack up very high on the on paper offers. I wonder where it stacks up on the real offers that are going to be there. And that is ultimately what we're talking about, you know, because this is a tough trade to pull off, right? Because you don't want to end up being like the Knicks after they traded for Carmelo Anthony, where it's like, cool, great, we have Carmelo Anthony and nothing else, right? That's not what Kevin Durant is looking for. And I don't think anybody is going to punt on their future for Kevin Durant at this point if they don't have a real chance of winning a championship.
See, this is the conflict right here. Like, I'd rather watch Bam for the next 10 years. No, I'd take KD over Bam all day. Like, this is where Heat fans find themselves, is that there's a conflict in terms of what do you do? Like, would you rather just continue to move along forward, get this close to the NBA Finals, get this close to a championship, or go all in on that clearly established superstar who, look, no doubt, Kevin Durant, even at 33, is a better player than Bam Adebayo is today. But we've got some questions to get to.
Let's get to this one. Steven Torres, don't you think if we get KD, more players would want to come play in Miami for less money? Yeah, I do.
Yes.
The problem is the timing of it, right? Like, Kevin Durant is not getting traded tonight. A bunch of free agents are getting signed tonight. By the time you figure out the Kevin Durant stuff, I don't know how much time left you'll have to fill out that roster, or what free agents will even be available. So you might have to wait a year to fill out that team, you know, and kind of go. And even then, you're looking at sort of an assassin-style group where it's just like a bunch of Rashard Lewis's, you know, the way it was at the end of that Big Three era. That's not building something for the future. That's going all out to win this championship. The difference was in the Big Three era, the Heat thought LeBron was going to stick around for basically the rest of his career for much longer than he ultimately ended up sticking around. And they were trying to do that, but they were also, at the end of that, starting to shift towards some more development and stuff. And so I think there's part of that that you want to keep, right? And we know that this player development program is strong, and maybe there is enough, maybe they believe and have enough faith that, hey, we could trade all of the young players for Kevin Durant and pair him with Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry, and we'll just subsist on Max Strus's and Gabe Vincent's for the next 4 years. Maybe that's the case here. And then but then if you're giving up all of the draft picks, which will go until 2029, you don't want to tank once Kevin Durant his contract is over, because you don't have those picks anymore. So that's why I keep saying, if Pat Riley's going to get Kevin Durant, I think he's it'll sound like a short-term move, but I think he's going to want to try to build something that's more sustainable long term, because 7 years from now, it can look like a complete disaster, especially because the championship's not guaranteed even if you get Kevin Durant, just as Brooklyn just learned. So,
yeah. To answer some of the questions that we're getting as far as who else would be available, yeah, I mean, you could get stuck with Blake Griffin's, Kemba Walker's, you know, names along those lines, older veterans that are like, oh, you know what, we want to compete for another year. Goran Dragic, I mean, the same reason why he signed in Brooklyn was because he thought there was a good chance of them being able to, you know, capitalize on the star-level talent and win a title, and it didn't quite work out that way, so we'll see how it plays out. Any other questions that we've got so far?
Yeah, this one. How much money did the Heat have left to sign people? They have their taxpayer mid-level exception, which is worth a little upwards of $6 million per year. They still have that to ostensibly fill the power forward spot. That's probably where this money is going to go. And then after that, it's veteran minimum. So they can still bring back Udonis Haslam on the veteran minimum.
They will.
And they can go out and get other outside free agents as well. It's called the veteran minimum exception. And basically, it's the bare minimum of what you could sign a player to, and you can exceed the salary cap in order to bring those players in. So that's basically what it is. But right now, the Heat have, I think, if you include Udonis Haslam and Nikola Jovic, 13 players under contract. So we're talking about two more spots that they could fill here. One of them will go to that player that you signed with the traded player exception, and then another one would just go to, I don't know, like they could just promote Michael Mulder from the two-way contract onto the 15-man roster. I mean, it's going to be like it'll be probably something small like that. You know what I mean? So we're pretty much looking at what the roster is going to be. The only big question mark there's two big questions remaining. Who do they sign with the mid-level exception, and do they trade for Kevin Durant? They're two really big questions, but those are the two questions.
Yeah, that's a good way of framing it.
The Deadman signing.
Before we wrap up,
the Deadman signing is baffling again. It's you're signing a guy to a stackable salary. Is he worth $4.5 million a year? Absolutely not. But he was a good rotation big, a good backup. Good people like him on that team. Doesn't hurt to bring him back. Keeps the continuity there. He's happy with his role as the backup to Bam, but also at $4.5 million, that's something that you can, if you just add that to the Oladipo contract at $11 million, you're at over $15 million in salary that you could send out before the deadline and get a nice piece back. You know, if you want to try to make a non, you know, superstar move at the deadline that can potentially get you over the hump, those are things that you could do, or things that you could use to do that. This question comes from Ryan. Do you think that they're not going after a four because they think that Nikola Jovic can play now? No, I don't think that's what it is.
No.
I just think that they are really disappointed that PJ Tucker left, and this could put more, this could create more opportunity for Jovic to play, but it's not like they think, oh yeah, we've got our answer at power forward in a 19-year-old rookie. I don't think that's the case.
Right. I mean, even how they operated with Tyler, I think they felt a lot more secure about Tyler and where he was at in terms of NBA level of play, in terms of what Jovic has gone through. Like, I mean, yes, that's not to disregard the competition level in Europe and everything else, but just in terms of the position he'll be playing, like, he is undersized. There's just no denying that. Like, he is smaller to be able to, you know, go up against high quality threes, fours, and fives. Like, he's going to be either too slow or not strong enough to handle that banging bodies and stuff like that. So to me, I think they see him as, like, not necessarily a long-term project. He can't contribute. He will contribute at some point this season if he's still on the roster, but not to start, though. Like, that's throwing him into that fire like that. They didn't do it with Tyler. They're not going to do it with Nikola Jovic. What else we got?
Is Jalen Smith available? Yes. Former lottery pick.
Yeah, I think he is.
Theoretical stretch five. I don't mind that on a minimum, you know, if you want to experiment with somebody.
I like the idea. The pick was a little much of a head scratcher. Like, I mean, look, he was somewhere in that kind of late lottery pick. They may have taken a reach on him, and they just didn't have a place for him. They wound up, you know, they have Ayton. They wound up signing JaVale McGee, Bismack Biyombo, etc. By the way, that Biyombo fitting, that would be a perfect fit here as well. So I'm just throwing that out there. Like, you have to shift gears a little bit there. I think we have to start considering all the veterans that are going to be looking, especially if KD is acquired by the Heat. Then you start shoring up the rest of the roster that way.
Steven asks, what's the plan with Omer then? I don't think it's different.
I don't think there is one. Yeah.
Just keep the development going.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, you hope he pans out. You hope that he takes another level. But at some point, it's like, you can't just throw him out there and say, play 20 minutes a game, 20, 30 minutes a game, and put up these kind of numbers. Like, there has to be a fit. Spo in particular likes to see the work behind the scenes. And it's not to say that Yurt7 hasn't put in that work, but We've seen other players that are much more established than Omer Yurtseev not get playing time on this Heat roster because Spo doesn't like their dedication off the court, you know, or what they do in practice sessions and things of that sort. So I think that's a big step there.
Joel asks, is a three-way plausible with Brooklyn and Utah, Donovan Mitchell to the Nets, KD to Miami? Why would Utah do that is my question. Like, if that's in the cards, then why wouldn't you just trade Donovan Mitchell for Kevin Durant and then pair Kevin Durant with Rudy Gobert? Like, why would the Jazz help Miami at all? So,
because Utah's not on Brooklyn's on KD's list of preferred destinations.
That would be that would be the answer, right? That Kevin Durant is saying, like, no way am I playing in Salt Lake City. You know, maybe that's what it's going to be. You know, and you know, unfortunately, superstars don't really have high regard for Rudy Gobert. That just, you watch the All-Star draft every year, and you can see that Kevin Durant never picks Rudy Gobert, by the way, because he's usually picking the team opposite LeBron. So maybe that's. Maybe that's part of it, but then if you're Utah, then why are you trading Donovan Mitchell? If you're not giving Kevin Durant back, why are you trading Donovan Mitchell? If anything, at that point, you're trying to find a taker for Rudy Gobert. So yeah, I don't see that making sense for Utah. Really, I don't know why they would do that. Jordan Cook, Bam, Jimmy, KD, and Oladipo plus whoever to fill in the pieces is a guaranteed Finals team. Do you agree?
Nothing. No, nothing's a guarantee. I think it's as close as you're going to get. Like, honestly, and I hate saying it, I mean, look, Philadelphia and Milwaukee both got better. Like, they have made incremental moves that maybe, again, don't move the needle supremely, but you shore up the rest of the roster. And you look at what Philadelphia has in Tyrese Maxey, James Harden, and Joel Embiid. That's a talented trio. And then you add PJ Tucker to the mix. You can add a couple players. Then they trade for DeAnthony Melton as well. Like, there's moves being made in Philadelphia that I think make them a stronger team than they were last year. And Miami was able to take advantage of them when they were depleted and being, you know, rocked by injury. That happens every year, and there's no shame in that. But right now, if you look at what Philadelphia has on paper, I think it might be able to stack up with that version of that roster, even with KD. You look, and also Milwaukee. I mean, their trio... They re-sign Bobby Portis. They bring in Joe Ingles. Who knows what happens with that group? That's another strong veteran group.
It's not
every
a guarantee.
Team looks like they improve.
It's not a guarantee, but it gets you really, really close. And that's exactly, like, if you can get that core, that's exactly the kind of move that Pat Riley is trying to make, right?
Thank you, Stephen, for that glum note. Death is a guarantee. Yes, I'm aware. Although I'm trying to beat that one too. We'll see how it works.
Going back to Omer Yurtseven, he got some dunkaroos during the season. He was getting double doubles. He did. Thank you for remembering, Alex. He did get some dunkaroos during our credit cookie segment. King Taylor writes, would you rather the Heat trade for Donovan Mitchell or Kevin Durant? Now this is actually kind of interesting. Where are you on this, David? I know where I'm at.
I have no idea. Honestly, I really don't. I know it's kind of a weak response there. My gut tells me I would prefer the younger player that you can continue to build something towards, something beyond just the season and without having to sacrifice, I think, nearly as much. Having said that, KD is a bigger risk, but it's also the bigger guarantee too. Like, you know exactly what you're getting, and you've got an open title window almost immediately with him. Like, Mitchell, maybe not so much. There are questions about whether or not he can take another leap defensively, whether he can become more efficient, et cetera, et cetera. So still, I guess, again, my answer is Donovan Mitchell, but KD is probably the better answer, the better player right now.
I'm not even blinking at this. It's Kevin Durant, and it's not close to me. I think if you're all things equal, Kevin Durant's obviously the better player. I understand that Donovan Mitchell is younger and has the upside, and you can build with him, and he fits with Bam in terms of the window and everything like that. Whatever, that's great. Nothing against Donovan Mitchell. You and I are big Donovan Mitchell fans. But we're talking about Kevin Durant right now. And I actually we talked about this during the season. If the Heat fell short of their goal, which was to make the finals, then I don't really see giving up all of your assets for Donovan Mitchell as the logical next step. I think you need a player who's more ready right now to take you over the hump. And I mentioned Damian Lillard as a possibility. Like, I would have rather had Lillard over Donovan Mitchell, and I got blasted for that because Lillard is older and he was injured and all these things. But I just know that Lillard right now gives you a better chance to win the championship than Donovan Mitchell does. And that's what this is all about. And if you're going to give up all of your assets, then you better know that whatever player you get back isn't just going to be a good player. That player has to get you to the finals and give you a really good chance at winning it. Take my Damian Lillard and I raise you a Kevin Durant. I didn't know Kevin Durant was going to be available, David. I would have written about Kevin Durant earlier this season if I had
known that. Neither did the Nets, yeah.
No, neither did the Nets. Yeah, if you could get Kevin Durant, you do it. If all things are equal, right? If you're going to give up all of your assets and all of these things and the opportunity cost that comes along with it, then I want to know that I have as best of a chance as possible at doing the darn thing, and that's winning a championship. And Kevin Durant helps you get there. So I would go Kevin Durant, and it's not even a question to me. But I know that, like, I know a lot of people disagree with me, and that's fine.
Yeah. A lot of people chiming in here in the chat about Kyrie. Like, do you think that Miami would pivot if they go all in for, you know, apparently, look, right now the primary goal is KD, I think. The secondary goal is Donovan Mitchell. The tertiary goal after that, who knows? Like, I don't know if they necessarily have one, probably more along the lines of running it back or something to that extreme. They're not going to go all in on Bradley Beal yet. They're positioned, they're open, they're available to it at some point down the road. But right now, it's KD, Mitchell, and then who knows what happens next. But if those two primary goals fall short, is Kyrie an option still for Miami? Do you think that they would make a move to acquire him at his $37 million salary for just this one season?
Well, according to Barry Jackson, they would not include Kyle Lowry in a Kyrie deal. We already know that they would not include Tyler Hero in a Kyrie deal. So my question is, who are you trading for Kyrie Irving, if that's the case? That, to me, reading between the lines there of those reports, say to me that the Heat are not interested in Kyrie Irving at all, right? If you're not going to trade Kyle Lowry or Irving, then it kind of sounds like you don't want Kyrie Irving, right? And so I don't know, but it's an interest. Like, would you, if Kevin Durant gets traded to Phoenix, like whatever, let's say Kevin Durant goes to Phoenix and, you know, Bradley Beal's not moving anytime soon, Donovan Mitchell's not moving anytime soon, and you can get Kyrie Irving for the cheap. I do wonder what this Miami Heat front office would do if they would move off of their stance of not trading Kyle Lowry or Tyler Hero or whoever it is. Like, if it's between Kyrie or just running it back with this roster, I don't know. I really don't know what they would do.
Yeah. The reporting is that they kicked the tires on Kyrie. So to everybody saying that he doesn't belong in a Heat jersey or they're not interested, disagree with you there, and the Heat front office doesn't care. Like, they don't care about his off-the-court stuff. That's a guy who puts up points and is going to shake and bake your ass into oblivion, and they want that on that roster. So believe me, they'll be more than happy to get Kyrie Irving and all
you
the off-the-court
stuff.
Stuff. They'll deal with that.
I think you and I disagree on that. I don't think that they wrote off Kyrie Irving completely at the start of this whole process, but I do think that they looked into it and they came to the conclusion that we will not trade Kyle Lowry for Kyrie Irving. Which tells me that they don't think very highly of Kyrie Irving.
I don't know, man. Like, some of that seems to be like we couldn't get the Kyrie deal done, and now we kind of have to, you know, smooth over some.
That's fair. That could be the
case. Do a little massaging of personalities and saying, no. Put it out through Barry. Knowing full well that it's going to get back to, and then who knows? Who knows if Kyle even gives a damn? You know, like, you know, trade me, not trade me. Like, I came here to play with my boy Jimmy and to compete for titles. So if you're going to trade me at this point, that's beyond my control. So I don't know. I wonder how much of that is true. But if they even looked into in the first place, again, like to your points, like if you're not trading Kyle Lowry, how are you going to make the Kyrie Irving deal work? Like, I know we're devolving in the conversation here, but it's like, you know, you're if you're going to look into acquiring Irving, it's probably because you're willing to move Lowry, like,
right?
Because you need an upgrade at point guard.
I think you consider
you're not going to have two guys under 6 feet tall.
No. You trade Kyle Lowry in that Kyrie deal somehow, and maybe Brooklyn reroutes Kyle Lowry elsewhere and gets younger, but that's not Miami's problem. I'm with you, and the thing with Kyrie Irving, and this is why I keep going, like, if it's Kyrie Irving versus nothing, I do wonder if Miami moves off of its stance of, yeah, we're not moving Kyle Lowry for Kyrie Irving. And it's a lot easier to tolerate Kyrie Irving and all the stuff that comes with him for a few months, right? This is a guy who opted into his deal. He's only got 1 year left. You know what I mean? So it's not like you're hitching your wagon to Kyrie Irving. And it's if you think you can win the championship with right now with Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler as your top two scorers, and you still have Tyler Hero, and you still have Bam Adebayo, and you're not sacrificing draft picks, and you're not sacrificing at all the future, isn't that kind of the best of both worlds, where you get Kyrie in as sort of an assassin, and then let him walk, because you're just like, you know what? That was fun. We don't want to, but we don't want to sign you to a long-term deal. Have fun with the Lakers now. We're still building. We got our championship, and now we're going to still build for the future. We have more questions here, it looks like.
All right. I think, just a couple. Why are the Heat not going after Collins? I think Atlanta has made their move, right? They traded away Gallinari. So unless they're going to be in on the Ayton sweepstakes, which is what I've heard, is that they have interest there in trying to do something for DeAndre Ayton. Right now, they need John Collins. He's under contract, so there's no reason for him to move right away. And look, I mean, he's their player. So I'm sure Miami is, again, looked into it at some point, although I don't think, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, but I don't think the interest is as high as it is from a lot of fans. Like, a lot of fancy young player can dunk, can stretch the floor, shoot the three from the corner, etc. But I don't know that Miami's necessarily as interested. Look, they bypassed them in the draft for a reason. I don't know that they necessarily want to go all in on a John Collins acquisition. That's not the big swing that they're looking for.
Yeah, if you're going to have to trade a draft pick to get John Collins, and if you're waiting for Kevin Durant or Donovan Mitchell or Bradley Beal, then you need all the draft picks. John Collins just isn't at, like you said, he's not at that level. Don't go after John Collins. It's a short-term fix at the opportunity cost of, you know, the next superstar that you could get. Last question here, and then we'll sign off here.
All right.
D. Wade coming back? That solves a lot of problems.
Yes.
They need a second scorer, David.
Yes, you saw him. You saw him on Instagram.
Looks good.
I think
he's dunking.
Shooting a three. He dunked.
He's making threes.
I mean, that's six. Sixella.
How old was Michael Jordan when he came back? Is that what he? Isn't that what he tagged it?
Yeah, something like that.
I mean,
that.
He's like 40 something at this point, right? Didn't he just turn 40? What is it?
I think he may have just turned 40.
But, he just turned 40 in January.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's coming. Yeah, I don't think he's coming back. Sorry. Sorry, guys. I hate to break it to you.
Yeah, breaking hearts over here,
doesn't
David.
Doesn't seem real life. He's got to do work already. He's already ingrained in the Heat, the Jazz front office to do what he can over there. All right, so
Steven says,
that's a much more important.
Steven says, y'all deserve credit cookies for this episode. I think that's a good place to end this. Thank you, Steven. Thanks absolutely. For listening. You're always on those live chats anyway, so we appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. That'll do it for today's episode. Again, thank you so much to all of you who tuned in to hear our thoughts and breakdowns on NBA free agency and Miami Heat free agency in particular. And should anything happen, we can guarantee that we will jump back on and make sure to cover all the latest news, rumors, and any transactions that might take place. If KD becomes a member of the Miami Heat, I think we can find the energy to have a bonus episode for all of you to enjoy. But to all of you who did tune in, make sure to subscribe to the show on YouTube or wherever you get podcasts. Subscribe on multiple episodes, multiple formats, wherever you can get the show. We always appreciate the support, and always make sure to please send in comments and suggestions, because we love to hear from you throughout the off season. That'll do it for today. This is David Ramil signing off for now. Thanks so much for joining me, Wes.
Wrap it up, B.